Well, you know, it's not me, it's the Holy Spirit, so don't get mad at me. What can help you become a better people manager is to understand John Maxwell's five levels of leadership, okay? And the best way to start that is a case study, okay? I need you to form six groups like before, okay? One, two. Actually, this can be one group, and then these two tables. And then same here. And then I think you guys and this group. Yeah. Okay. So we have how many? One, two, three, four, five, six. We have seven groups. Okay. Form seven groups. Read the case study on pages 3 and 4. First 3 minutes, read it on your own. Try to answer the questions. And then after that, discuss it for 7 minutes with your team to try to come up with a team answer to the three questions. All right? Ready? Yeah. 3 minutes, self-study, 7 minutes discussion for a team answer. Go. Okay. All right, teams. Can I have your attention? Let's do this on a plenary basis, all right? Who is the boss of Joan Weatherby in this case? Who is the boss? Okay. So, this is a case in which you are the boss, correct? All right. What specific issues or behaviors will you address? Any team? Anyone? What specific issues or behaviors will you address? Volunteer. Yes, Dennis.
I would address the imbalance between results and welfare.
Okay. She is too result-oriented and not relationship-oriented?
Yes.
Okay. Does the group agree? Yes? All right, Sky? Yep.
Respect for people and her temper.
Very good. What recommendations will you make to correct and or eliminate this situation? What will you recommend? Anybody? Yes.
From our group, we would recommend transferring her to another department.
Okay.
where her weakness can be more exposed. For example, her problem is people skills. And maybe in another department, she would need the support of, you know, other people. Parang ganun.
Are you serious? Okay. Yes. Noel. Okay.
I would introduce her to Rodnell.
Rodel.
Rodnell.
Okay.
Because it was not mentioned whether she's married or not. Most probably she's single. No.
Okay.
Mainit lagi ulo eh.
All right.
No. I would encourage her to connect with people inside and outside of the company because she really needs to develop relational confidence. Pastor Manny shared to us about there's an issue about her not working to create confidence in others.
Yeah.
So it would take time, takes trust to be confident with somebody.
Okay, very good. Anyone else on that question? Julius.
Well, I think we agree, our group. Okay. Well, we would address the situation. We would give her a specific time period to allow her to change and make to develop whatever she needs to change. But then warn her that if she doesn't change, you take her out. And subtly mention to her that you have ideas of a possible replacement, so that because it seems like she's a highly productive person,
okay.
She's very highly productive. So the only way to shake up a person like that is to really give her a strong message. You're very serious at this point about those issues because it really does affect the company and the other employees. So That's what we would do.
Okay.
I guess one of the things that we also talked about was, for the past 2 years, if I were the supervisor, I haven't talked to her about anything. And then now I'm bringing this up. So.
And giving her an ultimatum.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
We need to fast for that group, by the way.
So, but, you know, I guess starting with a specific complaint, so it's objective, you know, particular, and right on the dot, so that she knows exactly what's being complained about. And then after that, you know, hopefully find a way to help her develop where she's lacking, whether that's harshness. Because ultimately, what you were saying, it's up to me. Because if I'm the leader, and if I haven't brought it up for 2 years, and I just talked about her accomplishments and achievements and not really dealt with some of the complaints I've heard already several times in the past, then it always goes back to me again.
Very good. What specific changes must you make in your leadership of Joan? Yes, Pastor Manny.
You can't procrastinate or delay confronting wrong. And I think probably it doesn't say here, that, but it seems to me the reason he's probably not been confrontative at the beginning is because she has achieved a lot of results. And that's sometimes I guess from a management perspective, because of her value, then you somehow just tolerate her flaws. But it seems to me, reading into it, this is actually a potential disaster waiting to happen, because if the environment that she's working in is such that the people don't tell the problems if there are, it's just a matter of time. Magkakabulilyaso yan, and it's going to be a bigger problem. And so I think the wisdom there is, regardless of the results, if you see a flaw, even though they're doing well, and I think you owe it to the person. It's not being hard. It's not being you're doing a disservice to your supervisor if you're not confronting the person right up front. So definitely the boss. I mean, the supervisor has to change as well.
Okay. Whose fault is Joan?
It's our
fault. Your fault.
Yep.
What is your fault? Julius?
I put here, well, actually, in a way, what I wrote down as far as change in specific leadership is I would need to realize that actually I've been using her.
Bingo.
I've been using her for the department, for the business, just because she's producing results. I don't care about her as a person. Wow. I don't care about her as, her development. Yeah, yeah. I'm just caring about the results in the bottom line. So. The bonus. So we need to change the attitude towards.
So you have
to adjust that.
Knowingly tolerated Joan.
Right.
Yeah. Not just for the business, but because you are
personal gain.
The case is you were making your bonuses. Is it fair to say you have been using Joan?
Yes, stop using her for your benefit is what...
You know, there's a very thin line between managing people and using people.
Wow.
Okay? 2 years! You have allowed people under Joan to suffer. Because you valued Joan's output, by the way, your bonus, more than the welfare of the organization. Do people do that? Every day, I'm afraid.
Company, but also there's a possibility that the supervisor is afraid of confrontation.
Very good. So you value your comfort more than the development of Joan or the welfare of the people to whom Joan is being inflicted. Okay? It happens every day. Okay? Happens every day. Okay? Why are you talking to Joan now, according to the case? Because of the niece. What happened to the niece? The niece reported to your boss. Okay? So, just as a side comment, if one of your subordinates is the niece of Bishop Manny, you might want to treat that person well. No, just joking, right? In other words, according to the case, you were not going to talk to Joan at all. You were gonna allow this thing to go on and on and on. You are only talking to Joan because you have been exposed. What do you call that? Who are you concerned about? It's called selfishness. Okay? It happens every day. Okay? Now that you're talking to Joan, this is a one-on-one now. What might you've now seen the light and you've repented. You're now sitting down with Joan. What might be the first thing that is good to tell Joan?
I would apologize first.
Bingo.
Yes. I apologize for saying, for not confronting, talking to you the last 2 years.
Joan, we have a problem. Okay? So we, kasama ka na. We have a problem. Let me start with mine. Joan, will you forgive me? I should have done this years ago. I admit to you, I did not do it because you are producing results, and frankly, it's been good for me. Last night, I had a realization. Joan, will you forgive me? Now, if you do that, what is that called?
Humility.
Okay. On earth, other than the power of God Himself, there is no power greater than leadership humility in influencing people. Other than the power of God Himself. There is no power on earth greater than leadership, humility in influencing people and setting the stage for effective people management. Bring it home. No power on earth greater than, other than the power of God, greater than parental humility, paternal humility in influencing children. And setting the stage for effective leadership of a family. No power on earth greater than the power of spousal humility in influencing our spouses who are kind of difficult to influence sometimes. Other than spousal humility. You know, that's about 80% of it. If you learn that in the mirror is the solution, in the mirror is the problem and the solution, you're going to be way ahead of the game, okay? I did not talk to you, Joan, because I was selfish. Will you forgive me? And whether Joan forgives you or not, that's not your problem anymore, okay? That's between Joan and God. This is a true case study. It's a composite of two true case studies. In one study, in one case, the Joan... they hired an executive coach, Coach Joan. Joan changed and lived kind of happily ever after. Okay, and in the other case, Joan refused to change and she was fired. Okay, and this team, this is the most cruel and wicked team in this class here. You know, before admitting your fault, you were going to give this poor girl an ultimatum: shape up or ship out. But, Julius, it happens every day. That's what leaders do, every day. And you can imagine how crushed people get, okay? Let's go to John Maxwell's concept of leadership, okay? On page 5... you have that wonderful chart. On the vertical axis is degree of influence. On the horizontal axis is time. Okay, now, this is where John Maxwell's concept of leadership starts. Basically, he's saying you increase your leadership effectiveness by bringing people from merely complying to committing to you. And this happens over time. Okay, now, I want you to look very closely at where zero leadership effectiveness is. What is at zero effectiveness? What is it? compliance. At zero effectiveness is compliance. In other words, what Maxwell is saying is if all you get is obedience, do this, yes, sir. Do that, yes, pastor. If all you get is compliance, you are not an effective leader. What you want is commitment. Compliance is people obeying you. Commitment is people taking the initiative to add value to the organization, even without being told. Compliance is coming in at 8 a.m. because that's what the rule book says, but leaving at 5 p.m. because I've done my time. Commitment is putting in the time that is required to accomplish the task. Okay? So basically, if you go for compliance, you're going for the minimum. What you want is to go for commitment because you want the maximum. And you do that by improving your leadership effectiveness. And Maxwell is saying there are five steps. The first level of leadership is position. Okay? On page six, level one is position leader. People obey you because you have the title. And beside the word positional leader, write the word rights, R-I-G-H-T-S. You lead on the basis of your rights. May karapatan ka, ikaw ang amo eh. Okay? You lead on the basis of your rights. That's the lowest level. Do this because I'm the boss. Okay? By the way, that's the default leadership style of parents. Do this because I'm your father. It's the lowest level. And what you get there is compliance. But when you're no longer around or when the kid is no longer in your presence, he or she will do anything he or she wants. Because she's not committed. He's not committed. Level two is permission leader. Beside permission leader, write the word relationship. The R word is relationship. People follow you because they like you. You have a relationship with them. The third level is higher than permission, according to Maxwell, is production leader. And here people follow you because of results. Write the word results. What you have done for the organization. Matinik si pastor eh, kanya we follow. Galing si pastor eh, grow kami ng grow eh. That's why we follow, okay? Results. The next level is people development leader. Here you write the word reproduction. People follow you because you reproduce yourself in them. You develop them, you train them, you disciple them. Now you're very familiar with that, okay? People development. There is reproduction. And finally, personhood, where people follow you because of who you are. The word there is respect. Okay? People have known you so well, you've worked with them so well, that they, by virtue of who you are, they follow you. There is so much respect. A lot of benefit is granted to you. In fact, pastors have a lot of respect. The weakness of the model is this. It is not necessarily sequential, in my view, because like I said, you enter into a church by virtue of the pastor being pastor, he automatically gets respect. See, and of course, you are respectful until proven otherwise, with your actions. Okay, and that's why the responsibility of a pastor is so heavy, because there's so much respect given to you in advance. Okay. Naka-advance yung respect sa atin, Padre. The affection, the respect is there. And in fact, even when you fail, people will insist you are a respectful person. Because there are a lot of benefit of the doubt to the office of pastor. Okay? So, a parent, for example, a mother has both position, permission, production, and people. To an infant, the mother is all five. It's a level five leader. Okay? So, ang weakness lang ng, this is my commentary on Maxwell's concept, it's not necessarily sequential. As a matter of fact, those levels, you relate to people on those levels, sometimes three at a time. Okay? Three at a time. So, but anyway, it is a good framework. All right. So becoming a good leader takes time. There are no shortcuts. Leadership is natural to a few but can be developed by anyone. And like I said, it is not necessarily sequential. Position level is, you get that by virtue of showing up in the office. Okay, it's the title. The company, the church gives it to you. Okay, respect is the people who give it to you. Okay, and you could enhance it or dis-earn it, depending on your how you relate to people. Any questions so far? The key thing you want is, let me ask you, to your children, what would you prefer, compliance or commitment? It's a good. It depends on how old they are. Okay, to your two-year-old, you want compliance. You know, when I say don't put your finger in that socket, baby, do not. I don't care what you think of that. Do not put your finger in that electrical socket because you'll get it. So, depending on the age of the individual, but ultimately, what we want is commitment. Okay, now be careful with what you answer, because if you say commitment, therefore, will you allow for non-compliance in your relationship? Would you allow for deviation from your own style? Will you allow your child to be weird, kind of, you know, as long as the heart is clear? And that's a challenge of parenthood. Because for convenience, we fall back on position leadership. Why should I do that? Because I'm your dad. But dad, it doesn't make sense to me. Well, too bad. I'm your father. And I'm the one who pays the bills. That the signal you're giving me, Dad, is as soon as I have the ability to pay bills, exactly. Therefore I don't have to commit to you anymore. Exactly. See?
That's good.
And so you have to look at your heart as a father. I'm speaking from my own experience, not a very stellar one, as a father with three boys and one daughter. And I struggled with this, and my mistake was not shifting quickly from compliance to commitment. And the trick is to shift just ahead of the child, so that before he becomes or she becomes rebellious as a teenager, you're kind of ready for that already. And here, in my experience now as a parent, I am learning in spades the concept of unconditional love, because I want to rebuild, I want to make sure ultimately the relationship is so strong that I can influence my children towards the Lord and towards my own values ultimately. Okay? It's never too late, by the way. It's never too late. Okay, so rather than the five levels of leadership, my proposal is six ways to become a better people manager. And I have the six ways there. Number one is to make sure five structural things are in place, and we'll deal with that very quickly. Number two is to cultivate managerial competence. We've done that last semester. We won't discuss that at all. Number three, become a person of influence, not just one of authority. Mentor and coach, then empower your people. Cultivate the right attitudes to engender a team culture and make the workplace sustainable, if not enjoyable. Items five and six will be next semester. Today will just be items 1-4. Okay. Why this? Because there are six burning issues in people management. The first issue is the issue of clarity. That is why the structures, okay, are things clear. Number two, the issue of technical competence. Number three, the issue of influence. Number four, the issue of mentoring. Number five, the issue of attitudes and culture. And number six, the issue of sustainability. Okay. All right, let's proceed. So let's go to number one. Make sure five structural things are in place. Good people management cannot happen in a vacuum. It presupposes the existence of some basic structures. The most popular leadership literature assumes on the existence of these structures. I mean, you can memorize John Maxwell's books. You can memorize Jim Collins' books. You can memorize Dale Carnegie, for crying out loud. But you will not get this, because those authors wrote within the context of a very structured society, okay? The U.S. environment, the work environment, has been very structured. And they presume upon those structures. Those structures, that principle does not necessarily apply to where we are. And many books on people management presume upon this, which does not exist in many organizations. Too many structural things are absent in many organizations. So I'm saying if you want to become a better people manager, make sure certain structures exist. What are these structures? Well, first, why? Because structure determines thinking, which drives behavior and results. Structure provides order, promotes discipline, and combats subjectivity. And the absence of key structures will inhibit the effective people management. So number one, make five structural things. Make sure five structural things are in place. The first one is mission. Its purpose. Is the mission clear? Okay. In Victory, we are blessed with the clarity of mission. Honor God, make disciples. Mission is structural and fundamental. Without mission, there is no purpose. We wouldn't know what we are here for. Okay? But we are clear. So mission is not an issue in every nation. Honor God and make disciples. It's very clear. So that's purpose. Mission. Number two, direction. Is there a compelling vision? Once again, we are blessed in every nation because not only is the mission clear, what are we here for, which is to honor God and make disciples, the direction is also clear. Disciples, making disciples in every campus, in every nation, in our generation. Very clear. And it makes for, we have the first two structures very, very clearly established in every nation. And you have no idea how that has contributed to the success at a human level, even at a human level, of Victory in every nation. Because of the clarity of mission and the clarity and hugeness of the vision. Okay? Vision is structural and fundamental. It tells the organization where it should go or aim for in the pursuit of its mission or purpose. Without vision, we may know what we're here for, but we wouldn't know in what direction we're headed. Okay? Can I ask you to stand up? Just to illustrate, okay? Index finger to the ceiling. Index finger to the ceiling. And I would ask you to indulge me. At the count of three, I want you to close your eyes. One, two, three, close your eyes. At the count of three, I want you to point and face where you believe north is. Okay? The sky is not the north, all right? So at the count of three, point and face to where you think north is. One, two, three, point and face. Point and face. Close your eyes. Point and face. Point and face. Lower those fingers. The sky is not the north. Point and face. Okay, what I want you to do is open your eyes, look around you. If I ask you to walk towards where you think north is, what will happen to this group? We will collide with each other, okay? North is right there. Okay, north is right there. So let's do that again, okay? North is right there, okay? Index finger to the ceiling. Count of three, close your eyes. One, two, three, close. Count of three, point and face to where I told you where north is. Point and face. One, two, three, point and face. Point and face. Point and face. Where I told you where north is. Point and face. Open your eyes. Look around you. That's vision. Okay? Sit down. Thank you very much. When vision is clear, you can harness everyone in the organization to go in the same direction. The premise is everyone in the organization agrees with the purpose. And so you are clear on the purpose. But without vision, you will still not harness the strength of the organization. So if you have vision, it is a powerful tool to get the organization where you want it to go. Okay? So make sure five structural things are in place. Is there a purpose? Is the mission clear? Yes. Honor God, make disciples. Is the direction clear? Is there a compelling vision? Yes. Disciples making disciples in every campus, in every nation, in our generation. Let me spend a few minutes on vision, okay? What is important is, as individual pastors, you translate that vision to your congregation. Okay? Translate the vision to your congregation. Let's say a vision . What is my vision? What is the vision? How do I accomplish my vision? And why don't I go and do it? Okay? That's wrong. What vision is you start with what you want to do. What's the vision? Okay? You just go ahead and do it. And you figure out how along the way. Okay? The principle is this. Vision cannot be hostage to how. Okay? In fact, there's nothing wrong with this. What, how, and do it. But this is not a vision. This is an operating goal. What is our goal for next year? How will we accomplish that goal? Okay, let's go do it. There's nothing wrong with that process, but that is not a visioning process. That is a process of establishing goals and operating plans. A vision is disciples making disciples in every campus, in every nation, in our generation. It's kind of, you crazy, you know. The reason why vision cannot be hostage to the process is because of the nature of vision. By nature, vision has to be a little bit crazy. Because vision is up there in the sky, and we live here on firm ground called current reality. The separation of vision and current reality produces tension. For vision to be vision, it has to be a little bit crazy. If it's, oh yeah, we could do that next Tuesday, that's not a vision. That's a short-term goal. For vision to be vision, for vision to capture the imagination of people, it has to be kind of unreachable, but kind of reachable, okay? And because of the distance between vision and current reality, I mean, we're in 60 countries, there are, what, 200? Because of that separation, the separation creates tension, okay? Now, we don't like tension. People don't like tension. So, if the separation creates tension, you want to relieve the tension. What is the typical way of relieving tension? Okay. How? Make it closer. How? Lower the vision. Or increase current reality. Typically, if you lower the vision, you will join the biggest club on earth. It's the club of broken dreams, okay? And the vast majority of people live their lives with compromised dreams. Wag na lang, ang hirap. Wag na lang, bawas-bawasan natin, pare. Hirap yan. Di na makakatulong yan. That's the typical response. And that's why people, some organizations, never achieve their potential. Because the leader does not push the organization to its limits or even beyond its limits. What the good leader does is it uses the energy produced by the tension to create solutions, creative solutions. Use the tension produced by the loftiness of the vision compared to current reality to generate creative solutions. When John Kennedy said, "We will land a man on the moon," in response to Yuri Gagarin, the first man to orbit the Earth, the problem with Yuri Gagarin was he was not an American, he was a Russian. And so the Americans were beaten to space, and how dare this second-rate economy beat the U.S.? Didn't we win the World War, etc., etc.? But the fact is, Yuri Gagarin was the first spaceman. Okay, and so Kennedy said in 1960, before the end of this decade, we will land a man on the moon. And the NASA engineers might have said, "Mr. President, with all due respect, are you crazy? Okay. You know, you can tell if a vision is a vision. When the response is, are you crazy? And your response has to be just a little bit. Okay? So let's practice. I'll tell you, are you crazy? And I want you to tell me just a little bit. Okay? Are you crazy?
Okay?
Not slightly, okay? Not totally, okay? Pag totally, hindi rin vision yun, okay? Sasayad yun, all right. Mr. President, we do not have the technology to land a man on the moon. What technology do we have? Well, we can shoot a rocket through the atmosphere and make it go around the earth. No, I don't want to do that. I want a man on the moon. And by the way, I want him back alive. And that's a very important part of the parameter, okay? Mr. President, we can't do that. How long will it take you? We don't know, sir. Maybe 20 years. How about 10 years? I'm speculating on the conversation. But Kennedy stuck his neck out because the technology did not exist. Well, you know what happened. July 20 or 21, 1969, before the end of the decade. Patay na nga si Kennedy noon eh. Okay? Neil Armstrong deplanes, as we say in the Philippines, deplanes from the lunar landing module and says, one small step for mankind, one giant step for mankind. And he landed on the moon. And we know he came back alive because in 2009, we celebrated the 40th anniversary of the moon landing. And Neil Armstrong was 75 years old. It would not have happened if a slightly insane president did not say, I want a person in the moon. Mr. Morita of Sony told his engineers, I want a music player that is small enough to put in my pocket. The Japanese engineers might have said something like this, Morita-san, are you crazy? Sir, we don't have the miniaturization technology available. We can do a transistor radio that small. I want it in my pocket. Because without any research, just like Steve Jobs, without any research, Morita said, I've seen the young people in the ghettos of New York. They carry around what were called ghetto blasters. Okay? Dig it, man. Cool, man. Dig it. How can you possibly be cool if you're carrying your music player on your shoulder? Okay? Anyway, the Walkman was born. The most successful electronic consumer product in the history of electronic consumer products, of course, until the iPod was born. But Steve Jobs, the late Steve Jobs, did not invent anything. He was the classic tinkerer. So he took the principles of the Walkman and digitization was possible. And so he was able to, and this is the failure of Sony, by the way. The failure of success is you stop there, you see. There was no reason why Sony could not have done the iPod. But they stopped. See, the failure of success is complacency. And Jobs took it from there. But the mother of the iPod is a Walkman. And it's because of a slightly insane chairman of Sony. He said, I want it. Okay? The technology did not exist. Okay? So, don't throw out people who are slightly crazy from meetings. Because they might be contributing to the germ of a vision. Okay? Let's bring it. Yes.
So the ready, fire, aim is okay.
As far as visioning is concerned, yes. Now, when you go to execution, iba yon. All right. Now, be careful now. Okay. Be careful when you're talking operational execution. It's gonna be what, how, and do it. This is only for visioning. You cannot apply visioning principles to operating principles. Okay. You're going to drive your people crazy. And they're going to say, Pastor, you are really crazy. You're not just a little crazy. So, the National Statistics Office, the front office people went to the commissioner. They said, sir, minumura po kami ng mga tao. In fact, dinudroan po kami.
This is years ago.
Why? Sir, you know, here's the story. Somebody takes a 12-hour trip from Tuguegarao or a three-day boat ride from Mindanao. They've been in Metro Manila. First, they stayed in a cheap hotel. They ran out of money. Now they're staying with friends or relatives. It's been a week. They've been in our office every day for a lousy birth certificate. And we cannot give it to them because we cannot find their data. Now, this is being told to me by a member of the staff who happened to be in one of the seminars. And she said, the commissioner says, sana ma-computerize natin ang data. See, the germ of vision comes from the sanas of your life. Sana ganito. The commissioner went home that night and he sat up in bed and he said, why not? And he went to work the next morning. He was a new man. They said, commissioner, with all due respect, we have to do too many things to accomplish that. He said, hey, do it. I want it. Not only will people not come here and fall in line, we will mail their certificates to them. Because we take it for granted today. You actually call up the NSO, marriage certificate, birth certificate. They actually mail it to you. Because of a visionary who had a slightly insane temperament. And if we had 50 of those people, we could change this country overnight. Okay. So, gentlemen, before the next coffee break, sabi po ni Henry Claude de Betignis, if you have a vision, the future is a consequence, the present pala, is a consequence of the future, not the past. When you have a vision, the present is a consequence of the future, not the past. In other words, what you want to happen will determine what you do today. Your vision for the future will determine what you will do today. Because when you have a vision, the present is a consequence of the future, not the past. 10 minutes coffee break.